Well, that's very anticlimactic.
Log Talk Radio.
Here we go. No wonder if the intro music was going to come on. I was thinking, wow, that's anticlimactic. I neglect my podcast for a couple of weeks, and it neglects me immediately as soon as I come back to it. But this is Joe Hackman, and thank you for joining us tonight. We have a very special episode, actually. We have an opportunity tonight to have, actually, the guest of the show is actually the host of the show. There's a history to this. I actually met the tonight's guest host, Erica Ellis, and I. We met through commenting on spinsucks.com. It's a blog that we both enjoy that Jenny Dietrich runs that has lots of great guest posters, and it's a really interesting and very funny blog to be a part of. And so needless to say, we sort of started reading each other's blogs, and Erica actually asked me, hey, Joe, can you do a guest post for me about podcasting, because I know you do a podcast and you know, you're kind of into the instructional thing and that. And I thought, wow, that's a great idea. So we exchanged some emails, and then eventually I just kind of came up with the idea, well, why don't I just get Erica on the podcast, and why don't I have her ask the questions, ask me and another guest or two that are also podcasters the questions. So what we've arranged for this evening is to have myself and Adriel Hampton here, who's also on the lines, to have this discussion with Erica and let her teach you about podcasting through her questions. She's going to learn, you're going to learn, and it should be really interesting. So first of all, a very warm welcome to Erica Allison and Adriel Hampton.
Thank you.
Thanks,
I'm so excited.
Hi,
awesome.
Adriel. And Erica, hopefully we'll learn something too.
Oh, I think that I'm going to learn plenty from you too. Thank you.
I think it's going to be a lot of fun. The three of us are probably always all learning, so based on what I've observed. But anyway, I'm going to let you take it from here, Erica. You are now the host of a podcast, of a live podcast on the internet.
Awesome. I'm so excited. Well, okay, I am going to take it then. Thank you, as I've said a couple of times now, for the idea to do this sort of podcast where I'm the guest host, and for having me on and just doing the whole nine yards. So I'm going to have fun with this. I want to start out by doing probably what you always do with your guests, which is to get them to tell a little bit about themselves. So I want to know a little bit more about your podcast that you do on a regular basis, and pretty much how did you start those and why did you start those. So I'm going to give you each an opportunity to do that, tell us a little bit about those podcasts, and I'm sure we'll learn right away what direction we're going in.
Okay, go ahead, Adriel. Why don't you start?
Well, I have a show called GevTuo Radio, which is here on Blog Talk Radio as well. It's every Sunday night at 9 Eastern, and it's also at GovTuoRadio.com. And what we talk about is emerging technologies in government or emerging technologies and their applicability to government with an aim of looking at GovTuo principles around transparency, effectiveness, collaboration, and participation. And interestingly enough, I kind of started in the same fashion that we're doing here, which was wanting to have good conversations and share them with others. And so, you know, why not actually broadcast these phone calls on the internet? And so it was born about 2 years ago, and we've been going ever since. I've got a number of co-hosts, including Allison Hornery and John Wells from Civic Tech in Australia, Steve Lunsford from GovTwit, which is a massive directory of government Twitter IDs, and also Steve Ressler, founder of GovLoop, a social network for government employees and contractors.
So it has co-hosts across the globe, it sounds like, from Australia. You do it
across the English-speaking world, at least, yeah.
Yes, okay. And I love how you phrase that, phone calls on the Internet, because that's really about the simplest description I've heard ever for a podcast,
yeah.
Which is really...
Well, people are always, yeah, people are always asking, oh, do I have to be there, or, you know, like, no.
Yeah.
I have to have a decent phone connection. Or Skype, I do Skype too, but I call Skype phone calls too.
True. And Joe, what about yours?
Oh, okay. So for me, I've been an IT entrepreneur, small business owner since 1997. And I was sort of the part of the anti-social media, I guess you could say, in some ways. It was a kind of almost a love-hate. From the security side, it was always a, gosh, this is a nightmare. But from the technology side, it was like, gosh, this is really cool. And in 2000, kind of late 2008, early 2009, I started really emerging myself more into a lot of the Web 2.0 technologies, the social networks, and the various blogging platforms, all the different stuff that was out there, because I saw why, you know, this is going to be really relevant to my business going forward. And one of the things that I learned about was podcasting, and I saw this blog talk radio thing, and I thought, you know, that'd be kind of fun. I like talking to people. So I tried an inaugural show. I had a show with a friend of mine who was wants to climb Mount Kilimanjaro in a wheelchair and will eventually.
Oh, wow.
His name's Bob Coomer. And that was my first show, and I was just sort of extremely eclectic because I had no agenda other than to learn the technology and to figure out how it works and how it would apply to my clients or, you know, to people that I advise on technology.
Right.
And what ended up happening as a result was it was one of the things that really worked for me. So I tried a lot of different things, but I just really enjoy the conversations and things that come out. And I've gained a bit of focus. My focus is now much more on I like to arrange panels that are interesting, and the topic isn't as important as it being a group discussion, because I think group discussions tend to cover a lot more territory. So that's kind of my deal.
That makes sense, and I can follow that trail that you were from where you started to where you are now. And something that you said is definitely something that I'm interested in, and that's the relevance to your business. And I guess, Adriel, I have the question for you. With Gov 2.0 Radio, that sounds like, in looking at your bio, that was definitely relevant to not just your work but your passion. Is that how this all started? You just wanted to obviously merge the technology and the transparency of government, but did you have that goal in mind that this was going to help what you were working on and that mission?
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, one of the big things I was trying to do is kind of surface the fact that there are a lot of really interesting people in government doing really innovative things, and then also be able to provide some light for mostly startups, but, you know, also other larger companies doing interesting things to improve government. And, you know, and it's been good for me from a business standpoint as well. I do a lot of speaking around the country and increasingly around the world on these issues, and I think having the Gov2 Radio podcast has definitely been a part of that, although I've also blogged for a long time. I, you know, like Joe, have done a lot of things, and I've found blogging, Twitter, and podcasting probably really great tools for networking and for really, you know, marketing ideas.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree with that, and that was a kind of touched on two questions I had there, and Joe, you've mentioned a little bit about the relevance to your business. Has this been a positive return on investment of your time and the effort to do this podcast for you professionally or for your business? And it sounds like, Adriel, you're speaking around the world, but is there a direct correlation there between the effort you're putting into this podcast and your business? And the reason I ask is I have a client that's contemplating moving a weekly radio show to a podcast, and we want to make sure that lines up with her business goals and what she wants to accomplish. So I'd love to hear some more about that.
Well, if you can ask, what kind of, is it a terrestrial radio show now, or what is the, or she's just looking to launch one? She's not doing one now, she's looking?
We have launched it. She launched a radio show on an AM station, a radio station, in November, and it's a chef. So she talks about all things culinary and restaurants and food and lots of global ramifications from natural disasters and how that affects our food sources and things like that. And it's a great show, but I feel like, and so does she, we could take it to a different audience and have just a different format than this 15-minute weekly radio spot on an AM station that you can only get if you're in a certain area, or if you happen to be online, maybe you can pick it up if the guy remembers to put it on there. You know, so there's some limitations there, and I wonder for her, is this moving to a podcast was really where I got this whole idea in talking with Joe and doing the guest post idea, was to just explore it a little more and determine, is this going to be a good opportunity for her and a good return on the investment for the time and energy it would take to do it?
Yeah, if I can, I can definitely speak to that, you know, from my experience having done the show for 2 years. And I'm now actually a paying customer of Blog Talk Radio. I probably wish they had a lot more folks that didn't know how good their free service actually is.
Right.
But I was with their free service for almost 2 years before switching over to a little more robust version, which has allowed us to do things like host through Skype. But having be free or very low cost, even for the most expensive options, really, it's pretty sweet. The hardest thing you have to do, though, when you go to a podcast is, one, the production value can be challenging. I've did a little research when I was trying to improve the production value of mine, and, you know, some people do some pretty wild stuff. They've got, you know, mixers and everything to work on the audio levels, and they do a lot of stuff on the quality side, the audio quality and the levels and whatnot. But the most challenging thing really is building your audience. The good thing, though, is that you can access a global audience. So for me, I'm not going for a mass audience. I'm going for a very specific, you know, small niche that's interested in what I'm interested in. And I think, you know, for something like a chef, you probably could get a much larger audience than my show. But when you're actually targeting people who are interested in what you're doing and perhaps interested in your products or interested in having you speak, or, you know, it's a lot better to one of the things I really enjoy about social media is the ability to micro-target directly to the folks who you're trying to reach. And I think, you know, most of my audience, I believe, comes from Twitter. Now, Blog Talk Radio has a large community of its own that would probably listen to more general interest programs readily. But that ability to target and to kind of you know, really expose my share within the Gov2o community is very valuable.
Joe, what about you as far as production? You know, you have your music at the beginning that caused, I think, a heart palpitation when it didn't start right away. But if someone is just getting started in this, what do they need? Do they just need a phone and dial-in number and set it up that way? What do they have to do with Blog Talk Radio? And walk me through that. What would you need to do to just get started and do your first podcast?
It's actually surprisingly simple, and you can go to Blog Talk Radio, sign up for a test, you know, just a sign up for an account, host your show. There's an option to, you know, I want to host my own show. Okay, fine. They provide a lot of documentation. Their documentation tells you how to set up a demo show, like a more of a private show.
Okay.
So that you can maybe call a good friend and say, hey, I need your help with this. I'm working on getting my Blog Talk Radio thing working. Can you get on the phone with me for 15 or 20 minutes? I want to check the sound quality. We'll try it with a phone, you know, see how it works, try it with a cell phone, see if there's a huge difference, that kind of thing, just to get a feel for it. and then listening to your own private episode to see how it sounds, familiarizing yourself with the controls on the microphone, because there's in your switchboard there's a little area where you can mute mics and things like that. But that's, you know, it's pretty basic. It's pretty straightforward to set up, and I think that's probably has a lot to do with the success of Blog Talk Radio, because literally within, you know, 5 or 10 minutes, anybody can have their own talk show.
That is very attractive to folks who don't want to pay to have a talk show on a radio format, a traditional format, but maybe want to reach a different audience. And like Adriel said, with the beauty of social media, you can micro-target and you can promote it to a niche audience if that's what your goal is, or you can broaden it out if you want. I have a question about time. So, Adriel, yours is at 9 o'clock on Sundays, and Joe, yours is, and that's 9 o'clock Eastern time, right? And then Joe, yours is 10 o'clock Eastern time. Is that just a time you picked that was convenient for you, that's the time that was available, or that's the time you feel like your audience will tune in to hear what you have to say? Joe, what do you think?
In my case, it's I have a young son, and it's very strategic in that it's after my work hours, and it's after my son's in bed.
That's
so
very
it's pretty
good.
Much it's in my time, and I don't have to worry about interruptions, or I don't have to worry about feeling guilty because I'm sitting here talking to people on the podcast, and my son's out, you know, playing in the hall, wondering what I'm doing.
Right.
So that's a lot of it, but I also schedule, like, a lot of my podcasts, a lot of my panels don't work at 7 o'clock in the evening on a Wednesday. So I've done a lot of panels, you know, early in the morning if there's people from Europe involved, or midday if they're East Coast and they can talk during the business day.
Right.
Adriel may have a different perspective.
For mine, some of the things we look at, one, Blog Talk Radio has pretty good customer service, and they'll, you know, answer your questions about what times are best to draw a live audience. So Sunday afternoons or evenings, Sunday evenings are, I believe, one of their higher traffic times. I think Thursday evenings also. But the other thing that I mostly do it out of convenience. I've actually had it at two different times, but part of it is similar to Joe. I've got one of my more regular co-hosts is a gentleman from D.C. who also has small kids, and so his kids are in bed. My kids, I, you know, pop them in front of the Wii and my bedroom. I wanted to go back to your earlier one about the you know, like, skill level kind of the mechanics of actually hosting. I've actually, one of the things I love about it, I mean, you know, it's a cloud product, right? So you're
right.
And between having hosting from a telephone and a computer, I've done a show from a hotel room in Monterey while vacationing. I've done you know, with the family. I've done a show from the Dulles International Airport in D.C. and I don't think you could really tell the difference from the shows I do at home. The only time I've really had a problem is if I have someone on who's on a cell phone and driving, because the connection is usually poor.
That is true.
And to the question of audience size, though, you know, I thought it was a big deal to have the show when, you know, most people would listen, and it is great to have live listeners who participate in the chat room, because Blog Talk Radio also provides a chat room. And people can ask questions there if they're registered. You know, often we'll get good questions from the audience that kind of propels the show along. We also run a Twitter hashtag for GovTier Radio, which is G2R, and get some discussion going there. And so having a live audience is very fun, and it kind of increases the energy of the show. But actual listens, 75 to 95% of the listens on the show are later. And that's because, you know, you've got the Blog Talk Radio site, you know, which allows you to replay the show easily. It allows you to embed widgets. We also just embed the MP3 directly into WordPress as a plug-in there that you just hit play on. And then also it downloads to iTunes, and people who subscribe on iTunes, it's all automatic, which is a nice thing about, you know, having a commercial platform. There are alternatives to Blog Talk Radio that I've looked at just a little bit just to know what's out there, but because I like the features enough, I've never tried a competitor since I started. And interestingly, they also do a pretty good job of reaching out to potential hosts. I mean, my show started because they reached out to a few of us in the Gov2O community and said, hey, you know, we don't have a show in this niche. Would you be interested in doing one? And so a few of us kind of all got that call and kind of, you know, talked amongst ourselves, and Gov2O Radio was born.
Thank you. Yeah, I think you've gotten a peek at all of my questions, Adriel. Thank you very much.
Joe's probably got more to say.
I think the thing that was interesting to me, as soon as I asked about your audience and your listening times, I realized, well, wait a minute, it's there pretty much as long as you want it to be there, so people can listen afterwards. It's evergreen. It's like a blog post.
Yeah, like a blog post. Yeah, and the funny thing is, the SEO on Blog Talk Radio shows is pretty good from what I've seen. And we had a show, we did a demo show, kind of like what Joe was talking about. I get a bunch of friends on the line.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we did a demo show, but we did it live. It wasn't a hidden show. And we actually mm-hmm. had a bunch of folks from South by Southwest on. And that show was one of the more popular shows that I've had. But the crazy one is my first official show was with Tim O'Reilly
mm-hmm.
From O'Reilly Media, Radar, and the Web 2.0 conference, and it wasn't the best show because I was, you know, we were very green, and we had some other guests on, and it wasn't terribly focused. But the fact that O'Reilly's name is in the, you know, in the tags and whatnot, it's over 300,000 listens now.
Wow.
And every time I do, you know, Google myself, that O'Reilly show comes up, and it's like linked to all kinds of other Blog Talk Radio shows. I think people use it in their own SEO. And it's just hilarious. I don't know how many of those 300,000 have actually, you know, really listened and appreciated the show, or they just clicked on the link, you know, and started an autoplay. But it's a very interesting phenomenon that show accounts for like more than half of the total over 2 years.
Wow. Well, and I saw it too when I Googled.
You did.
No,
yeah, mm-hmm. That's funny. Yeah.
Well,
it was
amazing.
It was a decent show, for sure.
Uh-huh. Well, and I guess I have a question, again, related to your audience, because even though you don't necessarily have to have them live, you still want an audience. You want your fan base, much like as I'm trying to grow a blogging community, I still want people to want to read and want to subscribe to my blog. I would imagine it's similar for your podcast. And how do you grow that community? Is it a scenario where you listen to other podcasts and you comment or you call in? And how do you do that? How is it through your social media sites? What's been your best case scenario for growing your audience for your podcast?
Joe, you want to take it, and then I'll jump in?
Sure. I think a lot of it, yes. to answer your question. I mean, it's really kind of all the above. But there's a couple of things that I think have a huge impact on listeners for your podcast. And
mm-hmm.
I think that the main one is, in my case, and obviously from Adriel's, because he's already given you a prime example, is your guests.
Right.
Because when you have, I've had some absolute nutty, funny groups of people that I brought
mm-hmm.
together in my podcast, and it's hilarious. It's really funny. It's really fun, and a lot of people, there's a buzz in the chat room, and I get new subscribers whenever I have one of those types of podcasts, and I meet people that I didn't know before, and I gain, people gain a connection with me because now they've heard me having a conversation, having a good time with some people that they respect or that they like, or their friends, and I think that kind of plays a really big role in your listeners. But of course, all the other avenues, in person, mentioning it, Knowing what topics people like, you might have a particular guest that you think is really relevant to a friend or a coworker or a couple of different people, and just maybe mentioning it to them, saying, "Hey, I know you like Survivor. Well,
right.
You know, I have a panel discussion with three survivors. You got to come. You got to dial in and listen, and you got to ask questions or whatever. So just things like that."
Yeah, how was that Survivor panel, Joe?
It was fun. It was fun. They're really cool people. I like the show. Friends of mine got me hooked years ago, and I've taken time off now and then, but this year's really good. And Yao Man is local. He's right here in the Bay Area, and he's a funny guy, and he's kind of a skeptic like me. If that's one area where I get in trouble sometimes in social media, it's because when I hear stuff about unsubstantiated claims about products and things like that, I get a little bit.
Right.
I turn into a little bit of a fire hose and kind of sometimes talk, maybe make some comments. And it's probably nothing like what you're thinking it might be, because I'm pretty constrained. But
You're pretty tame in the comments I've seen.
Yeah, I mean, that's typical. I mean, I'm not really that. I'm not a very polarizing individuals. So.
Joe's a businessman versus someone who's like an activist like me and says really incendiary things like an argument.
I was going to say you two are like black and white there, aren't you?
You know what? We were going to have a show. We were talking about it. It was kind of a joke. Some of our friends met, and you know, Adriel's on the left, and Tom was on the right, and I think Jonathan and me, we were kind of right in the middle on one side or the other. It was pretty funny, though. It was a good time.
It would make for a good show.
So
Adriel, did you have some thoughts on that?
I'll give you some thoughts on the audience generating.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting because when I use Twitter, I'm a real list builder. I follow a lot of people in a targeted fashion to try to get them to follow me back. And then interact and whatnot. And but I use kind of a different strategy, a more inbound lead type strategy with the radio show. And part of that is because I'm not aiming for a broad audience. I think if I was aiming for a broad audience, and also if it was a little more commercial, it's very non-commercial right now. We don't have any at the moment any advertisers, although that's something I'm considering doing. But mostly, we're an educational show, and so say if I was commercial, if I wanted to build an audience, I'd probably use things like Facebook ads and target those. But as is, we use social media very heavily to promote the show, mostly Twitter, and I think that probably 80-90% of our audience finds it through Twitter. So I have, for a long time, had a GovTier Radio Twitter handle. We have the hashtag. I usually do kind of what Joe was doing today, promote it a day out, or promote it, like when I book a new guest, I'll promote the guest. I will sometimes send out the link to subscribe on iTunes. I will tweet out, an hour ahead, 5 minutes ahead, and during, I'll do things like quote the guests and, I have a few Twitter accounts that are related to Government 2.0 and open government and government reform technology. And so I kind of, so I don't overwhelm anyone from one of those accounts, I'll tweet a little bit from each of them, before and during the show. And that's been pretty successful. And then also one of the things I've done to build the audience, you're a smart woman for talking, and exploring it, because I just jumped in without knowing very much and didn't.
I usually do that.
that's good. Well, it's good for you and for your clients. I'm 2 years in and still going, oh, duh, I should be doing this. So one of the things I've done recently is I've stopped blogging so much on my personal blog and moved a lot of my short posts about Gov2O initiatives and press releases I get and things I get excited about, started blogging more at gov2radio.com, and so every time I push out, you know, a short blog post there, people, you know, right at the top of the page, it's got the player with the most recent show.
Mm-hmm.
I also put the widget everywhere, and, you know, and build social accounts for gov2radio here and there. Gov2radio is on empireavenue.com, which is a social media stock market game. And I use my personal profile, which is kind of the highest profile social media presence I have, to push it, you know, fairly frequently.
Right. No, I think you misunderstood me. I usually jump in without exploring. So this is
an aberration. Oh, you jump in without exploring. This is unusual. So
you're
going to be a podcasting pro before you go, but that's usually you're an experimenter. Well, experimentation is really good, but I think that podcasting is building an audience on podcasting is different, because it's not as easy as something like Twitter. But you know, and I think as Joe said, we're all people who are always learning, you know, trying to improve iteratively. So that's a good approach.
Yeah, I think there's certainly parallels you can draw between how you're building your audience on one social channel and this one. There's I think the common thread is just having different touch points for folks to engage with you. And I saw on your, I think it was the Gov2Radio blog, Adriel. I'm trying to remember. I looked at a couple of different ones, but I saw the podcast.
I have a lot of blogs.
You do. So I was looking at different ones, and I saw the podcast stream, so to speak. And then I saw that Empire Avenue. So you opened me up to a whole other set of widgets and share sites that I had never even heard of. So, you know, just visiting your blog can educate folks for sure.
I was just going to say, it's very similar. I mean, you're absolutely right. It's similar to how you would build out audiences. It's like people who get on Twitter and not, you know, like, oh, this is boring because no one taught them how to actually build a network.
Right.
And, you know, I met Joe through Twitter, even though we only live, like, you know, 10 miles apart. You know,
yeah.
I've met people. I usually don't meet people through the podcast, but I, you know, there's always people from my Twitter network being introduced to the podcast for the first time. Now I get, you know, frequently I've been on Joe's show. I think this may only be the second time, but, you know, I go on other people's podcasts now and again, which is a fun way to mix it up as well. This, the going on other people's podcasts, it builds both of your audiences pretty effectively.
Definitely. I can see that happening. You mentioned Twitter a lot, and I would imagine, and this was an assumption I had, but I like to check those first. Is it really, I think Twitter seems to go hand in hand with the promotion of your podcast. If you weren't on Twitter and you were just a Facebook sort of person, do you think you'd have as much success with your podcast?
No, for me, not at all, because I've never been a big fan of Facebook, so maybe I just haven't learned how to use it effectively enough. I think if I was only on Facebook ads might be productive. But
mm-hmm.
I think most of the listens come from Twitter, and that's because I built a Twitter network specifically around people interested in technology,
right,
innovation, government, and politics. And so, you know, I have a high percentage of my Twitter followers who would be interested in these topics. Whereas, you know, the hard thing with Facebook is you're appealing more to friends and family, and they might be like, there's Adriel with his Gov2O thing again, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
and pages are hard to build too. I've never had a because Facebook doesn't allow you to go follow people with a page and try to get them to follow you back.
Right.
Twitter does. So Twitter, because it was open infrastructure, I find it very easy to organize, whether it's organizing podcast listeners or organizing communities around a cause, or even organizing physical communities around locations. That's how Joe and I met, because I think we were both building local Twitter lists, and we both, like, at the same time, kind of put each other on our local Twitter list. And like, hey, you know,
that's interesting.
Yeah,
mentioned that before about the Twitter list. So, do you do that a lot too?
I love Twitter lists. I
haven't done them that much. I need to do it more.
Yeah,
I need more.
Not that it matters, because it's not really a huge thing, but if it wasn't for my Twitter list and some of my little things that I that keep my Twitter account somewhat alive when I'm AWOL, which happens sometimes. I think that number would drop. And really, when I'm talking about Cloud Score, just view that as an activity gauge. I don't want, if Ginny or Shanali listen to this and I say that it has anything to do with influence, they'll come attack me. But
there was a post today about that. Yeah, I have yet to respond, but I'm with you.
It's all fun.
It is interesting. And I have Twitter lists, and I'm on different Twitter lists apparently, but I find that if I make them, I don't ever really review them and look at them. And so that's where I fall down on the job with that one. Is that something
Twitter
that you
lists
do?
Are just unbelievably powerful and really the key. I think the lists on Twitter, honestly, if I were to say if there's one thing about Twitter that you should learn to use better, anyone, I would say it's lists, because anybody can learn the hashtags and all the other things. That's kind of, you learn that just organically watching the tweets. But the stuff that goes on behind the scenes happens on the lists. Lists are extremely important, extremely powerful. We should do a blog post.
We should. Yeah. Okay.
What do you think, Adriel? Because you're a list master.
Lists are my favorite feature, and I want Twitter to give me more. So if they're
how many lists do you have, Adriel?
Well, you're only allowed to have 20, and you can put 500 people on each. And I have run out of space on two, and then I've run out of 20 on my main account a long time ago, and so I'm forced to use. I also have many Twitter accounts. Actively manage like 10, but that are all really all personal accounts. And one is an account for my job with the city. And then they promote other, they kind of all are synergistic. But the Twitter list, the value is, I kind of use this analogy that, it's kind of around the Seth Godin tribes model, or the model of rebuilding community connections through social media. Whereas, like, when you follow someone, the relationships at one level, when you mention them or, say something to them through Twitter, that's another level. And then lists, just adding someone to a list or two lists or three, kind of gives you another way of grabbing someone's attention and kind of talking about your relationship with them. Kind of the way the offline analogy I'd say is like when you have a neighbor, you see them, and then you see them more often, you might start actually smiling at them or kind of, giving them a nod or a wave when you see them. And then eventually you may actually start talking to them and develop a relationship. It's not going to happen with all your neighbors. Some of them are always going to be the nod or wave, and then some of them actually become your friends. And I think Twitter is very much like that, and you want to use all the tools you can to build those relationships and to structure them. But I don't actually read the lists most of the time, but what I'll sometimes do is use the list to find things to retweet very quickly. But the main thing I use them for is actually to organize how I know people and what I know about them. So I'm actually building lists around the same way you would tag blog posts. I'm tagging individuals. And what it'll actually do as well is allow me to not only recognize relationships I have with them, such as like I have a list called Handshakes for people I've met in real life. There's also... one of my lists is Global Gov 2.0. Another one is Progressives Without Borders. They're like, global lists of people who fit those descriptions. And when I build up a new Twitter account, or when I'm training people on how to use Twitter, or I'm introducing a colleague to Twitter, I can actually go through and say, look, so here's all these government CIOs who use Twitter. And imagine how valuable that is to have the thoughts of leading CIOs around the world at your fingertips. And here, look, if you follow all these people, some of those CIOs are going to follow you back. And it shows, not only it shows the value very quickly when I'm showing people, but it also, it allows me to spin up new Twitter accounts very quickly. Like I've got an account for City Camp San Francisco, which is a non-conference I help organize. And I just like followed all the people on the Gov2O list. And because that's part of the Gov2O community, about half the people I follow back. And so automatically that account has a lot of credibility. It has followers and as people who interact with it. And I would never be able to do that without structuring lists the way I do.
That makes sense. Okay. All right. I'm slowly getting in there. I will do that. I have a few. And it's I always notice when someone puts me on a list.
Mm-hmm.
And I really,
yeah, so my theory is true.
Yeah, it's true. But here's the thing for me. The ones that are automated lists.
I hate those.
People,
God.
People
formulas.
That my friends
I hate
talk
formulas.
To. I do too, and I don't even know the person that made the list, and
I know.
I'm trying to figure out who's the friend that
like
I'm talking
to. Like auto DMs.
Yeah, so those bug me, but the real ones I like. Okay. All right, so
The other thing about them is say someone like, so I have like, I actually check whoever, you know, I check my followers regularly, but some people, but I don't get the emails. And most people who have a lot of followers have turned off the emails, but I think that a lot of people, even who stopped really checking their followers, do check their lists. So it's also a way of, because it's a smaller number, right? Even the most popular people, it's usually a 1-10 ratio of lists to followers at best. So they're more likely to notice if you add them to a list than if you just follow them.
That makes sense. Okay. Thank you for the diversion there. I had a question earlier, too, something you were talking about, subscribing to iTunes. Joe, do you do that as well? Do you ask folks to subscribe to iTunes for your podcast?
Yeah, it's actually automatic with Blog Talk Radio.
Okay.
Yeah, you're actually on iTunes. If I'm not mistaken, I don't think you have to do anything. I know
no,
mine was
Joe,
there.
Joe, do you promote that from time to time or blog about it or add it to
I
your
tell
profile?
People that it's on iTunes.
Hmm.
I tell people, or you can get it on iTunes, but they, in their player, there's a little iTunes icon.
Okay.
And people that are big iTunes podcast listeners will automatically click that anyway. They'll recognize it almost like the RSS button, almost like you might click an RSS button, they'll click the iTunes button.
And that I could see that as being a way to help promote the blog. I mean, the podcast and grow an audience.
I mean, anywhere
as well.
You can kind of get that out and about. I mean, anytime you can do that stuff, it's certainly going to help making it available elsewhere. Absolutely.
Okay. I'm going to skip back around to the art and the why of podcasting. And whenever I am working with a client on either a marketing plan or PR plan or even now social media plans, I have to have a strategy and determine what's the end result, what's the desired outcome, and match that up to their business goals. And I've already talked to you guys, and you've shared with me a little bit about how this tied into your business goals. But when you started your podcast, did you have certain goals in mind? And if so, are they still the same and have they changed? I know, Joe, you said yours have kind of shifted and refocused. You didn't really have that in mind. But have you achieved those desired outcomes yet? So, Adriel, we'll start with you. We heard a little bit from Joe.
I'm not the best. When I work also with someone I'm trying to train or consult with or when I'm speaking, I'm a little more strategic. When I do things at work, I'm a little more strategic. But I'm also a flighty idea guy. I bounce from one thing to another.
Or you could say organic.
Organic. There you go. That sounds much better, actually, than flighty idea guy. When I first started, my goal was to have – one of my goals was to have conversations with people who wouldn't necessarily spend 30 minutes on the phone with Adriel Hampton, you know, municipal employee – and sometimes blogger, and very effective in that. I mean, I got Tim O'Reilly because he was working on his Gov2O conference series, and I was launching Gov2O Radio, and I was doing it with some credible partners, including the founder of this GovLoop Ning social network. But that goal, I've been very successful. I've interviewed Kate Lundy, who's a popular senator from Australia who works on IT issues, and they actually approached me, through her kind of IT strategy advisor about being on the show, and people, one of the really cool things is that organically really interesting companies and folks ask to be on, and I've met a lot of interesting people, and having those conversations takes the relationship to a different level than just the Twitter relationships.
Right.
Or other social media channels or, you know, blog comments and such definitely have enriched relationships. And then, you know, I'm actually really working on a goal right now of expanding the show to more time slots through having more co-hosts who maybe host their own, you know, spinoffs of GovTier Radio. And that's been somewhat successful in that, you know, the first people I asked to do that were the team from Civic Tech, and they were like, well, we'd love to co-host and kind of, you know, get our brand recognized on GovTier Radio, and then, you know, hopefully at some point they'll spin off with doing their own segments. So I would say it's a work in progress. Been successful in the initial goals, and kind of one of the things I'm learning to do is when you hit a certain level, you need to figure out what's the next level, you know.
Exactly,
Several months ago, we themed out, you know, GovTierRadio.com instead of just hosting on Blog Talk Radio. That's been pretty successful. I think that was a really good move for us. It really kind of took the show to another level. You know, having the .com is still, you know, it's so funny that a domain name costs $10, but having one is really a differentiator for a lot of different products. Now I'm using .orgs more.
Right. Let me pause there for a minute. So you said you themed out. So technically speaking, you're still on Blog Talk Radio, but you just have the .com and you bought a domain name. Is that what you're saying, or you actually
we built a WordPress theme around it and used the plugin to play the MP3s.
I gotcha. Okay.
I'm not sure how keen Blog Talk Radio is on having all their people do that, because it definitely takes away it probably violates their COS in some fashion because their branding is not as heavy on it. We still use the widget, you know, front and center on it. And now that I'm a paying customer, I think it's less, you know, when you're a free customer, they want people to see Blog Talk Radio and sign up and listen to other shows and, you know, subscribe through their system.
Right.
But it also is very easy to plug an MP3 into the listen widget on WordPress. And that allows me to, you know, do more blogging and kind of have, you know, have our own widgets. So, you know, getting a hosting plan and then building a WordPress.org site around GovTier Radio was one of the ways we took it to a new level. One of the things we hope to do in the future soon is retheme it, kind of go to the next level with WordPress. What I'm really looking for, and I haven't found it, so if there's podcasters out there have a great WordPress theme that actually has multiple players on the front page, that's what I want. I don't want people to have to click through to find, you know, the play button. And maybe WordPress is not the best content management system for that, but you know, it was good for taking us to one level.
And so just following up on that, would another level beyond that be that someone subscribes and pays Gov to a radio, or how is this going to work economically?
Yeah, I think for us, one of the things would be Blog Talk Radio just changed their terms around advertising, especially I think for the paid customers, and I can't speak to the exact terms, but for us, I think going to the next level would be having sponsors. For a certain number of episodes or people whose logos, you know, they pay to have their logos on the website. But the radio format is fun because you could definitely, you know, so this show is brought to you by, you know, Joe Hackman's Managed Solutions.
Sure, yeah.
Joe Hackman's Managed Solutions. You know, do the thing that they do on all AM and FM radio, which is actually have the hosts do the promos for the sponsors. And I can totally see that being the next level for us. And I'm sure we probably could get there if I, you know, this is very much a passion for me and not a business, my podcast,
right.
But I've definitely thought about the business implications. And if I invested more in that, I'm sure we could get sponsors. In fact, when I first started I approached some big companies that were doing government social media work and collaboration work, and you know, said, "Hey, would you be interested in sponsoring?" And at that time, I was just Adriel Hampton with no platform.
Right.
I think today those conversations would be totally different. It's just that I've been a little stretched thin to do any of that kind of marketing. But if you've got a strategic plan, I think the thing is first build your show. It's like the people who follow a ton of people on Twitter before they even tweeted once.
Right.
You know, don't do that. I don't
think
you can necessarily go and get sponsors when you're, you know, if you have a show that hasn't. But I think that as far as a 6-month plan, a 2-year plan, when you're writing a business plan, obviously as you build your audience, you become more attractive to advertisers, especially within a niche industry.
Right. That makes sense. Joe, what about you? What's next with your podcast?
You know, I don't have any grandiose plans for the podcast itself, but as I had mentioned as we were chatting before the I think it was before it started, I was just mentioning how my blog's been gravely neglected, and I am doing some refocusing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's times where it's prudent for me to try a lot of new things and do a lot of different things, and then there's times where I kind of need to pull it closer to the middle because I tend to get myself spread too thin because I love technology. I love trying different things. I love plugging into new communities of people that are interesting and different and things like that. But I think I do need to do some consolidation. I already have. I'm not as active on some social networking sites that I had been. Of course, I'm not active on many right now just due to time constraints. But whatever I do with the podcast, because it's in the evenings, because it's an after-hours kind of a thing, I think the podcast is going to have to stay fun. And I think, or serve some really strong purpose in my business goals. But as of right now, it's more about fun to me. But it certainly, that doesn't mean that it can't help my business. And that doesn't mean that it doesn't help my business. But it's kind of like, I'll give you another example in my life of something that there's something else that's way more important. I'm a member of Rotary.
Right.
And I joined a Rotary Club to get involved in the community, to give back, to do things. And anyone who's been in Rotary for a while will start to, there's benefits to being a part of any group.
Mm-hmm.
So there's business benefit for being, you know, having your kids in Little League. I mean, whatever it is. So, the bottom line is that the Rotary is about that. It's about giving back. It's about the community. It's about that. For me, the podcasting is more about just having fun, doing something interesting, having interesting conversations. And it would be hard for me, I think, to, if it was a strictly or even a much more commercial type of a thing, I might struggle with that.
I can see that. And as both of you were talking, it just occurred to me, and I do this a lot myself, I can have strategic plans and ideas of those desired outcomes and goals, but then the allure of the fun and the new also captures me and takes me right down with it. And my husband is often the one that says, "Now, is that making you any money? Is that doing anything for your business?" And I think in the long run it does. Am I making any money by writing a blog post 2 or 3 times a week? No. But it does help me as far as my immersion in that world and in Twitter and social media, and especially now that I'm getting into blogging, that helps me then advise my clients on what I've learned from what I've succeeded in and help bring them into the picture. But yeah, it's totally because I like doing it. That's why.
Oh, if your blog hasn't brought you a customer yet, it's only a matter of time until it will. It absolutely will. I can promise you that.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great lead generation tool. People figure out what people are about. They can learn about you. They can go, wow, okay, this is the person because they get this stuff. I've got to sit down with them and have lunch or meet them for coffee and talk to them about this.
And you're right. I have gotten some serious leads from that, and people that may have never even commented on the blog or I never even knew they were watching have been watching and reading. And so, yes, it definitely gets you there in the long run. But I think the same could be said for you in the podcasting, and certainly Adriel has a more concrete sort of connection there. But I think you do as well. I think in the long run, it certainly is going to get you some positive outcomes there. Okay,
yeah.
We're looking at time. We're getting close there. I have a lot of other questions that I haven't even gotten to.
Yeah, we're 5 minutes out. You know, we're a talkative group. And
we are.
About filling an hour with the three of us, I wasn't concerned at all.
I was a little worried. I wasn't sure. And that was another question, just a quick question. Do you set the format for an hour length? You know, as far as blog posts, there's a certain time frame or word limit. As far as video, there's a certain ideal limit. Is there a certain ideal time for podcasting? Is it an hour? Is it less? What is that?
I can jump on that one. You know, there are definitely people who do three-hour podcasts.
Oh, my gosh.
It's kind of like a talk show, right? You know, it's your...
Right.
Your Rush Limbaugh social media hour, or social media 3 hours, right? Social media afternoon.
Right.
We recently cut GovTour Radio down to 30 minutes to keep it really tight and punchy. I know people who, you know, do 5 or 10 minute podcasts. I like a tight format, but Joe's got a really good format going with the multiple guests, which we used to do an hour show with multiple guests.
Okay. And Joe, has yours always been an hour?
Yeah, I think the most I've done a couple of 90-minute episodes. I think if you go through, there's a couple of them that have gone the full 90. I set them to 90 minutes. Again, this is something else I learned. You don't want to, if it's a 60-minute episode, you don't set it to 60 minutes. You set it to 90 because you want to give yourself some, just in case there's some, maybe it takes a while to get the guest on in the beginning, so you're just filling airtime.
Right.
Or whatever. And I certainly am not hard set at 60 minutes. If we say what we need to say, we have the conversation we want to have, and it's 25 minutes, it's 30 minutes, it's 40 minutes. It doesn't happen very often, but it has happened, and I'll wrap it up. You know?
Okay.
An interesting quirk of Blog Talk Radio is that it keeps recording even if the live show cuts off. So sometimes we'll go, oh, show just cut off, and it's because I didn't want to cut off the guest, and I know that most of my audience listens later. That's a little sloppy. Joe's approach is better, but it's something good to know about how the platform works. The other thing that's really interesting to me about the podcast, it's not like like you have to keep videos short or else you lose people's attention. People can do other things, and they do other things while they listen to podcasts. They're tweeting, they're answering their email, they're you know, multitasking. And so podcasts are beautiful in that they're made for multitaskers. People, I know, they say they listen to my show while they run. You know, and that makes it actually, I think, I value podcasting a lot more than video just because it's so much easier to produce and you don't have to be as tight as video. You're not running into the challenges. You know, you can podcast in your pajamas from the airport, you know.
Right.
You sure can't produce good videos. And I think you can have a sloppy podcast that can be popular, whereas you can't really have, sloppy videos that are really funny, really bizarre, but those are, I think, highly produced too, often.
I agree. That makes sense. Yeah, I'm on vacation right now and calling you from the beach on my cell phone. So, yeah, it can happen anywhere, and I certainly wouldn't have been able to do my video.
I wish I was on the beach, yeah.
Well, I'm in a house, but I'm near the beach, yeah. Yeah, it's Easter break for my kids. So I had one, just a couple of funny little questions that I think fun. Are there any sort of FCC rules, like as far as language and what can be said on podcasts? Are they governed by that, or is it just free reign?
Are you daring us to say something?
Do your best, George Carlin. No.
I don't think so.
There's a rating system. You can set an episode, if you think that your guests are going to be dropping F-bombs, you can set your episode to mature.
Okay, yeah.
So there is a subject matter-based maturity filter, and you can actually, I think, change that after the episode. But I'm not aware of anything. I don't think there
is. If Joe goes off.
But,
you know.
Yeah, if I go crazy, if I lose it on somebody, go completely nuts, then yeah, I can change the maturity filter after the episode to mature.
Actually, a word of warning. I was just going to say about language and stuff. There are Blog Talk Radio trolls, and I've had them before. It's not really easy to screen calls, even if you have a more. So I now only take callers who I really know who they are, and we generally don't even take callers. Because I had a couple of really bad incidents with live shows where people, like, you know, they kind of manipulate to get on. They act real normal, and then all of a sudden they just go nuts when they get on. It's a real weird phenomenon. Some people are sick. Just, you know, word to the wise, screening guests is good. I've made the mistakes, so you don't have to make them.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if I could add, there's one other thing with podcasting, because, I mean, podcasting, obviously we're talking about Blog Talk Radio, and that's a talk format, and you don't have to do the talk format. You can pre-record offline with Audacity and a microphone on a laptop and upload it on the BTR, so you can use BTR as kind of your sharing platform. You don't necessarily have to use their live mechanism and their chat and all that stuff. If you want to do some editing, if there's any concern, you're definitely going to want to pre-record. I mean, obviously.
Okay.
So there, you do have those options. You're not stuck with just that live show format. So you can upload and download and edit and things like that. I just want to make sure that you were aware of that.
And I do post-production once in a while. If we have technical difficulties or a couple of calls I've had that were inappropriate, I take it and download it in Audacity, chop it up, and upload it back in. And actually, when you have the more advanced features with Blog Talk Radio, it's really easy to replace a show in their system as well.
Okay, good to know. Not anticipating a lot of that, but I was just curious.
Adriel, I have a question. I have a question for you. For Adriel?
Go ahead.
You know, you guys don't mind. I know we're running long, but that's okay. We can go long if it's all right with you.
Okay.
My question is, if you have signed up for profit sharing on Blog Talk Radio?
I think we did originally, and it was just so meager that it was almost like, you know, it's one of those, like Google AdWords. When you don't have a lot of traffic, you know, like just telling you didn't make enough this quarter to get a check. So really for mine, because I'm going after such a small target audience of really like IT professionals and decision makers and visionaries, whether it's entrepreneurs or around, I mean, government is a big market too. So I think that for us, the real route to commercial success would be sponsors, not the profit sharing. Although I should figure out if that O'Reilly 300,000 listens has been generating.
You know what? I'm not going to get into big details or anything. I mean, I'm certainly not making money off the Blog Talk. I'm not making money off my podcast. But I was pleasantly surprised with the profit sharing recently. So
it's good. I turned mine off, I think, a long time ago, so maybe I just need to turn it back on.
Yeah, I would turn it back on because they're going to run the ads anyway, so you might as well take a piece of the action. That's my take on it.
And maybe what I haven't realized is they've grown up as our podcast has grown up, right, 2 years on the platform. They're, you know, I know I hear the Constant Contact ads all the time, and that's not a, you know, I'm sure that's not a cheap ad.
You've been on 2 years, and Joe, how long have you been on?
Since I think my first episode was November of 2009.
Oh, wow. You'll hit 2 years soon.
Later this year.
Yeah. So there's profit sharing with Blog Talk Radio?
Yeah, there's an option where you can turn on profit sharing, and I'm like, you know, whatever, I'll turn it on. I'm paying, I think, $40 a month for my service. I might as well see if I can get a little bit of that back.
Right.
It's been basically an investment and a cost for me, and I figured I'll give it a try and see what happens. And I was pleasantly surprised by it. So for what it's worth. But I think
I'm making money right now on this show. That's a great tip.
There you go.
Yeah. Maybe you guys are contributing to my kids' college fund or something. Maybe
there you go.
Yeah. Breakout episode, 10 million listeners. Right.
Right. Yeah, it was.
You want me to start swearing, right?
There you go.
I'm trying. So, Erica, I have a question for you.
Okay, go ahead.
So, tell us a little bit about what you do. You mentioned your PR and marketing. So, I think anybody, a lot of people that listen probably know you, but maybe they don't. And pretend like they don't.
Okay. Well, I am Erica Allison, as you know, but I have a business that's called Allison Development Group, and I'm located in Western North Carolina, just outside of Asheville, which was at one point ranked by both Rolling Stone and AARP. And the same year, Rolling Stone is one of the funkiest places to live, and AARP is one of the top retirement destinations. So you can imagine there's quite the clash of cultures where I live, but it's great. And what I do with my business is I help people develop their ideas and messages and their business. I, as a small business owner, can completely relate to what my clients are going through with their budgets, with their P&L and their balance sheets. And so when they come to me for marketing or public relations work, I always want to make sure that whatever I'm delivering to them adds to their bottom line, so that I'm not viewed as an expense or it's just not a pretty ad, or we put some great press out there, but that great press drives people to their business. So I have been on social media or in social media for not even a year. I think I just hit a year on Twitter, and have had a crazy year doing that, but it wasn't until probably November, December that I actually got it and understood how to create those communities and engage with people. And that's when January was when my blog really started to pop for me.
Erica, what is your blog URL?
It's AllisonDevelopmentGroup.com, and then just a handy dandy word of blog. It's a very market savvy URL, but it's part of my website for my business. And then you can subscribe to it. You can get it in your Google Reader. And I do a combination of typical blog posts, but they're focused on either marketing, social media, or some of my personal life work balance experiences. And then I do a Friday, usually a Friday weekly video blog that is really directed at small business marketing, and just try and share a tip or an idea each Friday with my typical client. And I'm trying to convince my mom, who's going to join us, my parents are coming this week to join us, to be interviewed by me for my Friday post this year, because my parents are entrepreneurs and they have had a construction business for 20 plus years now, and they're just some of the smartest people I know. So I just would love to interview her for my series. So that's what I do.
You should do a podcast author.
I know. I should. I'm thinking I'm hooked now. I like it.
Yeah, I like the video. I like your use of YouTube. I try to watch your videos every
Thank
week.
You. Thanks.
They're,
nice
they're always
to know.
Interesting. They're good. You do a good job.
Thank you. Thanks. I'm getting better at keeping them shorter, and I'm working on my pixel quality and video quality. So it's a learning process. And like you said, Adriel, when I started the video series, it was just jumping into it because I did a video where I called out Jenny Dietrich and just basically talked about how watching one of her videos and reading her blog kind of helped me get it and understand how I could put some of that to use. And with her encouragement and others, kept doing more video and determined I would make it into a real series that could help my clients and potential clients.
She is super cool.
Oh, yeah.
I really like Jenny. She's great.
I do too.
So, Adriel, yeah. Give us a 30-second probably most of the people that are listening to this, if they've listened to you before on my podcast, they know who you are, but tell everybody where they can find you on Twitter and all that good stuff.
Yeah, so my my blog with info about how to hire me as a speaker is adrielhampton.com, and my podcast is at govtierradio.com, and I'm on Twitter as @adrielhampton. Kind of one of the best ways to reach me. I do a funky thing. I put my cell phone number in my Twitter bio, and no one ever bothers me through that, which is actually what I hear from other people who do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
But it surprises people, and it's part of the transparency thing. It's my real cell phone number, actually.
That's great.
So, yeah, Adriel Hampton all over the place. You can, and also you can Google me.
Excellent.
Thank you.
And hopefully if you're listening to this, you know who I am, but if you don't, this is Joe Hackman, and I blog at joesgonesocial.com, and my business is Managed Solutions. That's managedsolutions.com. And I'm Hackman J on Twitter. And I just want to give my guest host one last opportunity. Did we get to all your questions? Did we cover the ground that you had hoped to cover tonight?
I am confident that you did. I'm looking back over my backup questions, which I didn't get to many of them, but you actually answered most all of them, and you guys have been so wonderful to take the time to do it, and I certainly learned a lot, and I'm sure other people have as well. If they're tuning in to find out how to do this, it was definitely useful. Thank you so much.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah.
And thanks for being a good sport about being the host. I just knew from your – see, that's the thing. That's where vlogging really helped you, because I knew that you – could communicate, and I knew that podcasting would be an easy thing for you to just dive in.
Okay.
So your vlog helped me suggest that as a thing, believe it or not. Kind of interesting.
That's
how
good.
That works, huh?
That's part of my transparency.
There you go. Well, very good. Well,
yep.
Thanks for listening, anybody who's listening to this right now and managed to make it this far. I really appreciate it. And hope you're having a great day. And you guys, thanks again, and have a great week.
Thanks
Joe.
Too.
You too.
Good night.
Bye.